I look really interested the whole time.
Okay, so a special thank you to the Stop McGee's, in particular to Rav for hosting tonight. It's a fascinating it's a fascinating topic tonight. Let me explain why. So I think I titled it
How Kosher
Is Genetic What? Testing or screening.
Okay. Upgrade
your
genetic testing.
I thought it was genetic testing. There we go.
Same thing.
Screen. This sounds busy. I'll fix this. Give it to you. Lost
the
your
photography ability.
Yeah,
expert. Yeah.
Now, let me explain what I mean by that. Each word has a. There's a lot there. And what I want to do is that the title of the topic has something behind it. And in order to appreciate the title, I want to take a step back for a minute before we actually jump into it. Genetic testing among the population, if you were to go to, you know, Mr. And Miss and Ms. Who are dating in the secular world out there, would they do genetic testing before they decided to get married? Or live together, have a child.
Probably not. Yeah, they might decide like before they would plan having.
Okay, so some before they plan having a child, which is often later on, they actually might go for some screening. They might.
But I feel like that's why there's so many. Okay, not that's not the main reason, but like there's so many like people who like have issues having children, whatever. Like or, you know. Can conceive, but then like unfortunately like the fetus dies very early, and you have all these genetic issues. So then. Maybe if it was more of a common thing and less of like a taboo subject or something like that, maybe less of that would happen.
For sure. there's no question. That question is how taboo is it? So here's what's fascinating. In the religious world, in the Jewish world, it is extremely popular. I mean, just the term, everyone knows about it. The question is...
I had no idea that it was a thing.
You had no use of it?
I didn't know that people did that before they got like...
Really?
I had no idea.
Okay, so let's... So I want to even go back to the 1970s. The 1970s begins with Jewish Ashkenazi genetic testing. Does anybody know why?
Because of like Tay-Sachs.
Very good. Tay-Sachs. So Tay-Sachs... is known, and in the 1970s, the technology...
It's a nature setting.
That's okay, you have other talents. In the 1970s, there's a tremendous push in the Ashkenazi world for genetic testing because of Tay-Sachs. Now, I want to fast forward. Oh, let me explain what genetic testing is. What are genes? What are genes? That's for people who don't know anything about biology. Quickly. What's a gene, and what are you testing? What?
Like a blueprint.
Okay, what's the blueprint of your body called?
DNA.
Your DNA. What's the connection to DNA and genes?
Your genes make up your DNA.
Your genes make up your DNA. How many genes do you have? Like, what?
No, millions.
No.
Chromosomes
no.
And
right.
Tons of cells.
Right, so you have tons of cells. Now, here we go. In each one of your cells is your entire genetic makeup. So, what they're able to figure out is, they can figure out what chromosome is the chromosome that has a deficiency for Tay-Sachs. They can test for it. They could know, by reading it and studying it, they'll know that this person is a carrier for Tay-Sachs. Now, here's something which is very important. Just because you're a carrier for Tay-Sachs doesn't mean you have Tay-Sachs. Not at all. Because in order to have Tay-Sachs, what do you need?
Two copies.
You need to have a chromosome, right? You need to have the... If it's a receptor... Let me just explain for a second. If there's two things that can happen. It displays in either if it's dominant or if it's recessive, right? So if it's a recessive gene, then what do you need to have in order to have this... You need to have two of them. Both parents have to be carriers. Then if you're a man or woman. So if both parents are carriers, then what are the chances of the child getting the disease? 1 in 4, right?
Yeah.
1 in 4. That's a very high percentage. 25% is considered very high. You wouldn't gamble 25% getting Tay-Sachs. That's a very high percentage. Now, but if you're a carrier, that doesn't mean anything. Because if a carrier marries a non-carrier, what are the chances of the child having Tay-Sachs?
Zero.
Zero. That's very important to understand. Having, being a carrier of taste sacs doesn't mean anything. Okay? That's very important. It just means you gotta be careful, you know. Okay. Fast forward 50 years later, 40 years later, how many people do you know today that have taste sacs? We have almost eliminated taste sacs in the Jewish community.
Because of genetic screening?
Because of genetic screening. Now, that what we're going to do is, in the halachic literature, in the 1970s, Rav Moshe Feinstein writes the most famous tshuva about genetic testing and testing for taste sacs. This test, this tshuva is going to end up being the basis for an organization, some chassidish guy, I want to say in Muncie, but I might have totally made that up, right? Sounds right, no? Who begins an organization called Dor Yesharim. Or Dor Yesharim.
Somewhere in America.
I'm pretty sure it's
Muncie.
Yeah.
Is it Muncie? It's definitely Chassidish.
Definitely Chassidish, right?
For sure.
Now, that's very important. If you take a look at the handout in front of you, I just wanted to show you that this is not... You know, genetics is not something which was just thought about in the 1970s. And I'm going to show it to you. This is why I wanted to bring these sources just right off the bat. The Gemara even says, Lo yisa adam isha lo mishpachas nechafin v'lo mishpachas mitzorim. A person should marry someone from a family of epileptics or lepers. Why? Because the Gemara realized if you marry into these families, there's a chance that your children could have it. Oh, actually, hold on. That's a very important question, by the way. What's going to happen to these questions?
They can't marry anyone.
Yeah.
Right.
What? Epileptics married epileptics and their kid
had will have epilepsy. For sure. I mean, not for sure, but it's a high percentage.
That's a really bad way of, like, getting rid of it in society, too.
It's so sad, but I'm saying I'm sure it worked out.
So remember, they didn't know. Well, it's actually very interesting what they did know. They knew that it was not good to marry sometimes close relatives. They did know that in their statements, inbreeding. They knew that there was a problem with...
That's really cool.
Certain types of marriages that would lead to genetic issues. It's clear they knew that. I could have brought you 20 sources. I just brought you two. The second source, and this is the Rambam. And by the way, that line in the Gemara is brought down the Shulchan Aruch. Right? Everyone quotes it as like it's understood that certain people you can't marry. Right? The Gemara says, this is amazing. The Rambam writes a whole prescription about medicine, how you're supposed to act and eat and behave and do it to be healthy. He ends with this. If you actually abide by what I explained and what you do, right? I guarantee you, you're not going to get sick. If you listen to my medicinal recommendations, you are not going to get sick. Listen, you'll get old, you're going to die. That happens to everybody. But you're not going to drop dead at the age of 42. You know what's Rafa? We'll need a doctor. And the Rambam was a doctor, so he's very happy, right? You'll be healthy. Listen to this. Ella in ken haya gufora mitchilas briaso. Unless you were born with some type of deficiency. Now, ohya ragil b'mirhag minamanu tabraim mitchilas maladaso. Or same thing. You are born with some type of defect, hereditary defect. Okay. Now, what the Rambam here is saying is clear that they knew that you could be born with certain defects. Now, here's the problem. The problem is we're not ancient Greece. In ancient Greece, in Sparta and Athens, those that study ancient history, what did they do to babies that were born with physical deficiencies? They killed them. They let them die on mountaintops. And they abandoned them. We don't do that. So number one, just because a person is born a certain way doesn't mean we treat them like second-class citizens. That's what it is. But the idea is, and there's some very serious diseases out there that we try to avoid. Right? So we're not talking about what happens once they're born and how to deal with these people. That being said, it says you got to be careful who you marry. You have to be careful who you marry. That's going to be an important statement. Okay, so point number one is you need to be careful. Point number two is what do you do about it? So there are two approaches. What to do about it? One approach could be, I believe in God. I marry who I'm going to marry. That'll be it. Whatever happens, happens. It's up to God. That's what Hashem wants. That's what it'll be. Blah, 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 blah. Right?
That's a
It's an approach.
Also gave us genetic screening.
Okay, okay. So,
and
so,
told us to do our Ishtadlos.
And told us to do Ishtadlos. So then you have the second vision. Wait a second. You have to do Ishtadlos. So now you have this battle between how much God, how much human beings. Now this is not just for genetic testing. This applies to everything in life. Right? It applies to, I don't know, studying in school. It applies to dating. It applies to driving a car and I'm not going to get into a car. I can get into a car accident, right? I'm not going to get into an airplane. I'm not going to... So in every area, this is not specific to genetic testing. I understand this is a global issue. So if you side, which I'm assuming people here will, side on the fact, you know what? I'm siding on the fact that we need to do something about it, then we have to have a discussion. So just quickly, I wanted to show you just two quick sources. There is an opinion, and how to deal with it is actually fascinating. But Rav Hirsch does talk about this notion that you have to somehow allow God to do things. The Torah tells us, that's the pasuk I brought, Tamim Tia Im Hashem Elokecha. If you go down to Rav Hirsch, Hashem Levado Hu Manhig Goralenu Madrich Maaseinu. Hashem by himself orchestrates, leads us, what's going to happen. Right? Right? It is God who establishes our future, and it is his will, that establishes things. Right? Don't prevent it. You want to try to do something. If it's not going to be, it's not going to be. And this pasuk, by the way, Tam Tia Shem Elokecha, is all about those people who deal with witchcraft and sorcery. And, you know, someone made a joke, and I think it was very serious. If you want people in Judaism to take it seriously, don't tell them it's halacha. Tell them it's a segula. Because for every reason, people listen to segulas more than listen to halachas. Right? It's a segula. It's a segula to go to this cave there and daven 40 times. Everyone will do it. Right? This topic I could talk about for an hour and get irate over, but I'm not going to. Right? Those of you that, you know my thoughts on these things. But what I'm trying to say is that sometimes, because people want easy fixes and easy way out. So the Torah says, Tamim Tia Shem Elokecha, you have to be pure when it comes to God. Recognize it's up to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Okay. That being said, we know in Chumash, Hashem gives us an ability, Pru or Vumah, Vikiv Shuha, that we are told all the way, right in Gan Eden, as in the primary time of human beings, we were created, and Hashem tells us, Vikiv Shuha. Says the Ramban, Hashem gave dominion over the world to use animals and insects and creeping things for the benefit of mankind. But first, subdue the earth, master it, appropriate, and transform the earth and its products for human purposes. You're allowed to use the world for human purposes. Now, not everyone likes to hear that today, right? Because it might not be all politically correct. But to use an animal experimentation for the benefit of human beings is totally permissible. You can't abuse it, but there's value to it. Okay.
First, oppose himself.
So it's very interesting to discuss the two sides of Hirsch. If we had more time, which exactly I figured his opinion. It's a fascinating conversation. We dealt with Hirsch. No, we didn't actually, I don't know, actually, I don't think I actually touched on this. It's a great understanding of Hirsch, how does he balance the two, but not for now. But it's an excellent point. So now we're up to, now that we see that there's this notion that we try to better the world, how do we deal with genetic testing? Okay. Dor Yesharim, let's fast forward. What is the goal of Dor Yesharim? So let me explain what happens. I get a letter from the Rosh Yeshiva of Dor HaTorah saying on May 23rd, the grade 12s are going to be going to location X for Dor Yesharim, Tachlis. I need a check for $200. Right? I'm like, what? Grade 12? Right? Okay. So, what is Dor Yesharim? What are they doing?
To be aware of your own genetic standing, right?
You don't know it.
Okay, this is very important. Okay, here we go. What is the goal? Very simple. What's the goal of Dor Yesharim?
They want to make sure that every
healthy kid.
Every shidduch is not one's a carrier, the other's not. They don't tell you which is which.
Okay, so here we go. This is very important. The goal of Dor Yesharim is. Its function is simply shiduchim, to make sure that there are healthy shiduchim, or in many cases, statistically, most likely, healthier shiduchim. It is not to eradicate genetic deficiencies in the Jewish community. Hear the difference? There's a very big difference. Dor Yesharim is a shiduch system.
But you're indirectly...
No. Okay. Yes and no. You'll see why. You'll see why. You'll see why. This is a fundamental question. Durasherm tests for 42 things. They've added more things over the last number of years. What they are, go to the website, they list everything. Now, what happens is, Zvi Greenberg gets tested, right? He has a number, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. I guess you get your number somewhere, right? The Sharchin calls up and says, I have a girl for Greenberg. Whatever it is, her number is 9876543321. What a coincidence. It's the exact reverse, right? Amazing. Right? So you call Doya Sharm. I'm 1, 2, 3, 4, is that? 9 days of that. The Shachin calls up. I don't even know this works, or whatever. They say either one or of two words. Either they say acceptable or unacceptable. Those are the two words. They say acceptable. Now, what does it mean acceptable? Acceptable means on the 42 things that we test for, this combination, from a genetic perspective, will not produce, right? None of them are carriers for either one of these 42 things. You follow? That's what it means, okay? Now, they have 42 things. Have you ever heard of something called J-swipe? Mm-hmm. J-swipe is what?
Tinder for Jews.
What? Tinder. Not J-swipe, J-screen. Oh my goodness, sorry. What is J-screen? J-screen is a different system. J-screen is another system, of course, in the United States, right, where they screen for over 200 genetic diseases. And there's a major difference. In Doria Sharon, it's all anonymous. I will never know what I have, what I don't have. Anonymous. J-Screen is a printed report. I'll give a report. You get a whole package when you're done. I think that was like $200. Right? It's not a financial. The issue is not financial. Question, what's going on here? Why is Doria Sharon a black box? Why those 42 things? 200, I have a question. Why do 200? Why do 2,000? So these are fast, let's begin. The function of Doria Sharon is, why do they keep it anonymous? Could someone tell me why is it anonymous?
I guess it's the ones themselves.
So,
no, I have to walk around knowing that you have X, Y, and Z.
Okay, let's play this out. Let's play this scenario out. I do J screen. I said J swipe, that's funny. And I do, I was like, how could, yeah, anyways, for real. And so I do J screen. I find out I have 200 where I lie out. What's the problem if I know all this information? I have this information, now what?
I don't think there's a problem, it's your own medical information.
I understand. I don't go to a doctor and find out what my heart, what's it called? My heart rate, my blood pressure, my insulin, my sugars, you don't know those things about yourself? You should. And we'll talk about the BRCA, because BRCA is very, very important. I'm assuming everyone's familiar with that. BRCA in a room of women, right? Now, what's interesting is these things are vital. You know everything about yourself. You know about your hemoglobin. You know about your...
Can
your,
you
your,
go get these tests done on your own anyway?
Oh, yeah, of course you can. Yeah, of course you can.
Go to the doctor and ask for the same test. So
we'll talk about that in Toronto.
There might be charges or anything.
No, it's just social service medicine. No, okay. Someone has it. I sent it to you.
You want to. You have to go through
the kids. Oh, I was right about sick kids.
So
23
and me. Isn't that like all of them?
Okay, 23 and me is very different. It's a different thing. Let's say the genetic test and you'll see why. So, the question is, why is Doria Sharon black box? The answer is Rav Moshe Feinstein, 1970s. Take a look at the bottom of your page. This is very important. It is advisable for one preparing to be married to have himself tested. He also means her self-tested too. You know, it was before Canada switched the national anthem. It is also proper to publicize the fact via newspaper and other media that such a test is available. This is extremely progressive in the 1970s. You can't read this in 1918. In 2018, I mean. Right? This is crazy progressive. It is clear that absolute secrecy must be maintained to prevent anyone from learning the results of a test performed on another. The physician must not reveal these to anyone. These tests may be performed in private, and consequently, it is not proper to schedule these tests in a large group, as, for example, in yeshivot, schools, or other similar situations. Oops. Young people.
Why,
but you're taking in one at a time to get a blood test. You're not all having.
Right, there's a mistake here. Young people, not and, there should be are susceptible to nervous tension or psychological tests, and therefore young men and women not yet contemplating marriage should not be screened for Tay-Sachs disease. So it's important is, and this is, by the way, a very long tshuva, Moshe finds. It's not a five-line tshuva, right? The rationale for Dor Yesharim is that one line of Moshe Feinstein. And that is, people walk around, they're going to know what they're going to know. Too much, they're gonna be psychological. What was the language here? It's not proper. They're going to be psychologically worried and nervous. And you want people to know what they have. Keep it a secret.
Like, I don't think other people should know, like, person X's information. But no, right. Person X should know your own information.
Right. So he's, okay, so you'd think that, right? But what's, so here's what's interesting.
On another.
On another, right.
He went from learning the results performed on another.
Right, but he actually says you shouldn't even know yourself. Like, he even said to give it a secret.
Well, like,
to yourself.
That adds to the nervous tension of that other people know about you.
Right, right.
That you're walking around and, like, people know you and they're like, oh, that person's a carrier.
Mm-hmm. How they know that.
If the spouse isn't either doing it anonymously, then you're gonna have to discuss it with them at some point, and then we're gonna talk about that.
That's a great point. Mirav, hold on to that point. That's gonna come up in a minute. So Dor Yesharim took the stance of absolute secrecy. Privacy, you don't even know, but you don't even know yourself. Fast forward 30, 40, 50 years later. The question that everybody asks is, are certain things that Moshe Feinstein said, is that still contextually true? So the question you have to say is, wait a second, now that we know much more about genetics, but you cannot compare the information then to what we know now. Knowing much more about genetics today, if people knew that they were a carrier for disease X or Y, and by the way, everyone's a carrier for something. There's 200 diseases out there. Everyone's a carrier for something, right? Everyone has to be a carrier for something, right? So, would you think that in the world where we're more familiar with genetics and how it works, is it something that perhaps at least that person should know? Just like in the year 2018, you know if you are deficient in hemoglobin or vitamin C or vitamin D or da 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 da.
Carrier.
What?
It's a little bit different than being carrier.
What's the difference?
Disease versus like just health overall.
You could take pills to balance those out or
so
whatever.
What would someone say if I know that I'm deficient in a gene? Can I still marry someone who has a deficiency with a genetic issue in Tay-Sachs? There's something I could do. What could I do? If two people know... No, what could you... No, way before adopting. What could you do? What could you do? You could still get married. You could still have beautiful, healthy kids. What can you do, people? Generic engineering. No, genetic engineering is something that you could do. Engineering. It's very expensive.
What's the word for
genetic therapy?
Okay.
Now, what do you do? Very simple. You could test a woman's eggs. You could check to see if does this egg have this genetic mutation. If it doesn't, you can discard it.
Are you allowed to?
That's a fascinating halachic question. Can you discard an egg knowing that it has genetic? 95% of us can say, of course you can. Why? Because unless it becomes implanted in the uterus, it's not considered a halachic problem.
It's not even fertilized.
It's not fertilized. It's not a problem. It has no ability to, right? So there are 95, there's like one, you know, Hasidic, right, who says you, but and this is standard medical practice. Now, it's a challenge and it's complicated and it's harder and it can be very expensive, especially in America. Right, it can be expensive, so I understand why you want us to walk into it. But remember, we live in a world where, again, this is not 1970s, that under certain cases, if this couple still wanted to get married, there are things that we can do and have healthy children. Now, they could say, we don't care. We'll roll the dice, 1 in 4. If you have Tay-Sachs, you're not living past 12? 5? Oh, it's 5? Right? other types of muscular dystrophy. But there's some very serious, serious diseases out there that are very, very difficult to deal with. Okay. With that knowledge, let's take a step back. So, this is a question that people ask. The fact that Moshe Feinstein said about 50 years ago to keep it quiet, does it still apply today? So Doris Sharon says yes, it still applies today, and therefore they don't know about it. People don't know what they have. The problem is Doris Sharon is based on shiduchim. It is not, the goal isn't to remove and obliterate certain types of genetic diseases. It would be possible. I'll tell you why it's possible. Because if everyone knows what they have, if I know, I'll give you an example. I know that I do not have, because I did a screening in a hospital, I know that I have, that I don't have any, any chromosome for, let's say, Tay-Sachs. I know. I was tested. I know about Tay-Sachs. I also know that Miriam, my wife, doesn't have, but she was also tested as well. Right? So, in theory, my kids never get tested for Tay-Sachs. My kids will never have Tay-Sachs. Right? Because how can they can't. Impossible. They're not carriers. So, if I'm not a carrier for Tay-Sachs, and if I know I'm not a carrier for this, I'm not a carrier for that, so, in theory, if I marry somebody who's also not a carrier...
Then what happens to all the carriers? They just get killed?
Okay, so what happens to carriers? So, a carrier just marries a non-carrier, and then the kids also are not going to have it.
But
the,
or
no, the
carriers.
Kids can be carriers.
How do you obliterate?
Right. So you obliterate... You
then you'll have less carriers, though.
Right. Once if you're a carrier, then the pool...
Evolution,
right. Which is essentially what's based on what's happened to Tay-Sachs. Right. Now, the reason also why we know... we also know about... Also, we can also recognize it much earlier. If you recognize it earlier, you can actually fix it and do something about it. There's other ways to cut it off early, which is the case, too. By the way, now, actually, you know the truth? In North America, it is far more likely, we're talking like 400% more likely for a non-Jew to be born with Tay-Sachs than a Jew. That's how far we've removed Tay-Sachs in the Jewish world. I just heard that statistics. Yeah, isn't that right? So that's just to show you how things have changed. That was, it used to be called the Ashkenazic disease. Now it is absolutely not at all. So it just goes to show you what that's just an amazing thing.
Do you think they're going to start testing for a different set of, like?
They already do. They already test for 42. Remember, Doris Sharm started off with a couple, and now they've gone to 42. Okay, here's my question. What do you do with 42? What do you do with 200? What do you do with 2,000? How did they get to 42? So this is what they do.
Like, how do they choose?
Should be like the worst. Probably
as issues came up, they're like, oh, it's added to the list.
The most likely.
So here's what they said.
And why is it a problem to do 200? Like, why?
Why do 200? Why are you being tested? Do 200? Do 2,000? So here's what they said. I want you to understand the thought process behind it. They chose these because here's the reason. There's two conditions in order to have it placed on this list. Condition number one is the severity of the condition. They're not going to look for blue eyes. Uh-oh, blue eyes? Forget it! Test for Doris Sharon. No, I'm using a silly example just because... I always want to show you because, by the way, because you can test for blue eyes. Right? Two, the severity of the... Two, statistic likelihood. What is considered statistic likely? In a population. Something which is in 1 in 1,000,000 to put on the list is absurd. It's not worth it. But if it's 1 in 5,000, I think there's a cutoff. I don't remember. It's about 1 in 5,000, 1 in 10,000, they have a cutoff. Anything in a sample population of someone being a carrier and the odds of them being a carrier are more than, let's say, 1 in 5,000, not on the list. It's too small of a number. We're not going to test for it. And everyone says, why not test for it? I don't understand. It doesn't cost any more money. Why are you testing for it? Beshita, they do, what?
Nobody would marry anybody.
Oh, like you'd always very important. Beshita, they stop the 42. Once you're 42, go to 200. Go to 2,000. Right? The answer is for purpose. Excellent point. Because there's no end. Everyone's a carrier for something. Yeah, at some point in time, you have to say, ad kan. You have to say, it's a cutoff. Right? Now, why is that important? Because at some point in time, that's what you have in Muna Bitachon. You follow? So on one hand, you need to do, you do your lack of autonomy start loose. You have to put your effort in. You have to do your research. You have to do your medical, da, da, da. But at some point, 1 in 5,000, at some point, you have to say, it's enough already. No one will get married. Everyone will be a carrier for something. In self, the divine.
Did Jay's screen cause there to be less marriages, though?
I was going to ask that. Or the less marriages in America.
Wow. Nobody's how in the...
Oh.
Jeez. I don't... That's a really interesting question. How could you... Here's the problem.
You could gather one that did both and see how long it took.
I know, but I think if you do Dory Chakram, you have to sign that you're not going to do anything.
Says Leia, if you sign Dory. Okay, yeah. Leia made a very important point. Are you ready? Said Leia, this is a very important statement. You'll see why. I bet this is very controversial on purpose. Leia just said, you sign a waiver that says, when you do Dory Sharon, you won't get tested from any other system. This question was posed to Rav Hirshel Schachter at YU. And said, if I sign that waiver, can I go against it? He says, of course you can. Dory Sharon has no right to allow you to sign that waiver. You're paying for it, it's a system. You're allowed to break it. It's not an issue at all. Says they're not even allowed to ask you to do such a thing. It's also in violation of another halacha. But he says, you need to know something. Let's say it's in your family, right? Your family has disease 43 and not 42, right? And the reason why you did Dor Yisharim is because you're part of a system and you want to be part of a system. And there's value in part of the system. And he says there's value in part of the system. But being part of the system isn't always enough. Because what about 43? What about 44? So Hershel Schachter, when he was asked this question, I heard him live. Okay, not live, it's a recording, but I heard his own voice saying it. Right? He said, do J-Screen, do 200 things. Why stop at 43? He says, yes, there's a point where you have to stop. But he said, he says, I'm not a doctor. He said, I'm not the one lying. He says, if medical world says 1 in 5,000. So up the bar, he says, why not? Right? There are those, for example, there was others who say no. They were upset when Dor Yisharim, I believe, went more than 30 even. Right? They wanted them to stop at 30 because they felt it has to be a certain point where you need more stuff.
Are there people that say that it's true, that you're not allowed to go? Like if you signed a waiver or whatever, then you're not allowed to go together?
I'm sure the rabbinic panel of Dor Yisharim says that. Yeah. I don't, it's a good question on the answer. I don't know. It's a good question.
So then what would be the point of even doing Dor Yisharim
if you're going to go? Oh, I'll tell you what. The advantage is that you're part of a system. You follow?
Yeah.
Right? Part of the system. The Smith. Because if her family or his family insists on it, you can say you did it. That's the advantage of it. That's the advantage.
Also, you can be part of this anonymous system, but then also have the results
for yourself. Right.
Wait,
okay.
No.
No,
it doesn't.
Sorry?
The whole point is,
what's the point of doing Dory Sharon? No, that's not the point.
No, that's not the point.
No, because if there are people who are saying, I want my kid to go on a shidduch date, and I want them to do it in this system, and part of this system is you got to call Dor Yisharim.
Because I think I see the main purpose of like anonymity is like from what Mirav said like retweet before, which is like if you go on like, let's say you go on one date and then you like discuss these things and then it doesn't work out and then someone else knows and then someone else knows and then someone else.
Wow.
But then with this anonymous thing, then you don't know, but you can know your own results.
You date 15 people, then 15 people.
Someone, like, oh, I need to tell them on by this time
that
I actually have this, and then what?
Okay. Asked Leia a very interesting question. Leia says, wait a second. What happens if... What happens if I know that I'm a carrier? I'm a carrier.
How do you know?
How do I know? Jason told me. Am I obligated to tell the person that I'm dating?
Yes.
I think so.
But at a certain point, yeah. Everyone has a different, opinion on when, but yes.
Before.
So, what's fascinating about this question, let's use the BRCA example. BRCA 1, BRCA 2.
Okay, what's BRCA?
Okay, BRCA is a gene.
Cancer.
It's for breast cancer. Breast cancer.
I like see it in like how it's spelled now, but I never heard it said.
Right. Now, what's interesting about this disease is that it manifests itself much later in life. So, cancer. When a woman has cancer, she really only gets it later, usually in her late 30s or early 40s. Depending on which one it is, there's different types of it, but the most common one is that it comes up later in life. So even if a woman is a carrier for it, yes, there's no reason why, you could live a healthy, you could have children, no problem at all. And then when you finish having children, there are certain things that you can do in order to make sure that you don't get cancer. So since there's it's correctable, it's common. So perhaps, and so what I heard once from someone who is an expert in genetics said, yes, but I think what I would recommend the person is, tell the person at a certain point that they're dating, and that moment, tell them to call me to my office, and I'll give them an explanation of exactly what it means, right, from genetics. Because the problem is, and this is a challenge, when you explain something about genetics, they don't understand what it means, they understand ramifications, and they freak out, right? But there's no reason to freak out, because, let me tell you, many people have many things, right? So the fact that you know this doesn't necessarily, should be enough of a reason to be scared, or to call it off. And so that's the, so again, even knowing these things, you wouldn't even necessarily be obligated to tell somebody right away, even beforehand. So, because there are certain things which are, let me explain to you the basis for it. At what point in time do you say, let's go back. You know the concept like finders, keepers, losers, weepers? That is not a Jewish concept, right? So if I go to a store and I go to a used store and I buy a table that has a drawer in it and the drawer is $10,000, just because you bought the drawer doesn't mean you keep the $10,000. You cannot keep the $10,000. It was in the drawer. I bought the desk. No. The guy never meant to sell you the $10,000 in the drawer. His grandfather had it in the back of his table somewhere, right? He stuffed it in there, you know, cash or whatever. The old days, the one to put it in the bank, right? So the same idea is true. When you get married, so it's under the assumption that certain things were revealed and you're open and you're honest about different things in a relationship. If it's something that is so severe that it's considered a mekach taus, so the Gemara says, you can get out of the marriage. You'd be allowed to get out of the marriage. And if it was the woman's thing, she wouldn't get paid her ksuba. Right? That's what the Gemara says. It's a mistake, mekach taus. That's the way it's phrased. Now, if it's something which is not, and by the way, this is true even if, not that they were dating, if they were married and it happened, right? But in many cases, if you're married and something happens in life, you deal with it. It's a challenge. It's not easy, but that's life. Life isn't easy. You deal with the challenge that you have. You don't just say, okay, forget it, I'm walking away from it. What type of attitude? It's a terrible attitude to have. You're never going to survive life. By the way, that's the challenge of this generation. We make everything, every kid is like padded, don't get on a bicycle, all these playgrounds have 20 inches of like padding so that no kid hurts themselves, God forbid they should fall and cry and have a scrape, right? Or struggle for a second. And the problem is, so you have to understand that struggle has value. I'm not saying you should be a pauper, but challenges in life are healthy. They're important for children to struggle, right? If every kid is the greatest and the best and gets 95s and everything, that's not good, that's not life. So one of the things which is important is and by the way, keeping these tests a secret, you're just making the stereotype even greater. Oh, it's a secret to anybody, hush hush, it's bad, don't do it. No, the opposite. If you make it more open and transparent, right, then perhaps people would realize it, that it's not such a bad, it's not a stigma, it's not something, but it's something which is part of life and you deal with it and you figure out how to handle it properly. And in fact, I'll give you an extreme. You know that, and no one knows this. I didn't know this until 2 days ago. Every child, when they're born, they are tested for what's called fetal, I'm probably not going to pronounce this right, fetal cretinor or something. Every baby in North America is tested for it. Why? Because if they find out right away this baby has it, it's treatable. Otherwise, they come very sick. So in fact, when babies are born in the hospital, they're tested right for 30 things. Instantaneously. You knew that?
I knew about that.
You knew that one? See?
Is that the potassium one?
I'm not sure. I don't know. Right away they test.
There's tons of tests.
So many people say, if you're already testing a baby for that, test for these 200 things already. Do it in... And he says, by the way, this should be not a Jewish shidduch thing. That's absurd. This should be something which should be standard medical procedure for every single person. When you're born, this is, right, get a printout from the hospital. This way you know, you know you can avoid, you know how to eat. And this way you can deal with challenges before they come up, right? As opposed to, you know, being blindsided sometimes by them. So the advocacy of screening is that the social context is very important, yeah.
Like,
there's a difference though between like testing for stuff after the baby's born and before like people get married or whatever, because it's like preventing a person from even being born or like.
No.
Once you're born,
they're already born.
Straight away, then you don't have to do it again later in life.
Right, that's later in life. Meaning, if the goal isn't for shidduchim, the goal is to understand your genetic makeup, and you understand this way you can understand more about genetics, and you can understand more about yourself. You could do both.
Why can't, so then, from the minute, that's a little crazy and a little planning in advance, but from the minute you're born, then you know, like I'm saying, you don't need to worry about it again.
Right.
There wouldn't be a concept as already
said. No. I'll tell the problem with that is, the reason why in a hospital they test for these things, because they can't wait to know this when you're 20. You gotta do this now, because if they find that you have these things now, they can deal with it. If that baby goes home, and a few weeks later is rushed to the hospital, the baby could die.
Yeah,
if they know right now, day one, they can fix it. Exactly, they can fix the diet on the spot. So there's certain things that you have to do now, from a genetic perspective, right? You can't wait till you're 20. And people don't even realize all these babies are tested in hospitals, right? Oh, I always knew I had 5 kids, and this potassium test. I had no idea what it was for. You know, it occurred to me, let's do potassium test. Everyone knows. Babies do potassium test. Why? I don't know. Doctor said so. Probably important. Right? It didn't occur to me. I mean, one time I was like, what are they testing for? Oh, some condition of some sort. But they do many of these tests, apparently. Right? Once you're already doing it, it's nothing. From a financial perspective, it's bupkis. Right? It's really very, very, very small. That's how, again, in the modern world. Now, you know, we could test today if we wanted to for genes that are people are more likely to have a good or bad, parnassa or physical fitness or intelligence. We could test for a lot of things and we'll be able to test for a lot of things. So everyone realizes at some point you have to say, okay, this is like, this is enough. And this is like, what's it called? Like cyber, genetically crafted babies, right?
Mm-hmm.
There's a danger to that. But so whatever that number is, I'm not saying the number 1 in 5,000, 1 in 2,000, 1 in 1,000, 1 in 10,000, whatever that number is, at some point in time, I understand. You have to say enough's enough, right? Because there is, of course, a danger to it. But, you know, I think there are, there are so many things that people can have that can be so dangerous. And there's so many things that people have and actually has zero impact whatsoever, and we shouldn't make a big deal out of it. And I think that is where sometimes the tension lies. What's a moom? It's not a moom. Being a carrier, even if Tay-Sachs is not considered a moom. So you're a carrier for Tay-Sachs, so what? Okay, you just be careful. You have to know, you have to be, just be aware of it. But it doesn't mean you have a blemish. It doesn't mean that, okay, you're never going to get married, right? That's absolutely absurd. You're not high risk, right? That's totally unfair. You don't have a disease, right? That's what people think. Just because you're a carrier for Tay-Sachs doesn't mean you don't have a disease at all. Just because you're a carrier, I think that's sometimes where people get a little bit, confused about. I want to actually play a recording of a man who had 2 children who were very sick. Just a few minutes. Hopefully, this will work. It's part of the radio show.
An additional exon or a deletion, which is a missing exon. And my wife, in my kid's case, 1 nucleotide in the body. And if you're aware, some genes have over 1 million nucleotides. 1 nucleotide, that's what I'm told. 1 nucleotide in the body is supposed to be, quote-unquote, the wrong nucleotide. And basically that causes the gene to be stopped reading the rest of the gene, so the body can't put out the expression. So to test for things like that would be, even if it were chronic appearance, would be prohibited for those expenses. Like I said, once we knew what we were dealing with, because it was a nucleotide level. And by the way, they couldn't even...
So, meaning what his kid had, they could never test because it was a nucleotide level. It wasn't even a chromosome issue. Right? That's what his kid ended up having, right? You can never test for that. It would be too expensive. Too prohibitive.
This till 2004, I think.
Didn't even exist.
That's what I've been told. To be able to look at the gene on a nucleotide level. So it would be the people that were much earlier, they would go ahead and test, and they would see that the kid had muscular dystrophy, but they would do genetic testing on the exon level, and they wouldn't even see. They couldn't figure out, like, what's going on, because the gene looks fine.
And then you found out about your second son.
Right, correct.
What's his name?
His name is Shimshon Yechezko. We really basically knew, but we didn't want to know. We needed time to observe the first one, but once you have your first one and you were told that it's a possibility, you start watching and you start seeing things, and you kind of, know, but we didn't really know definitively, but basically when we're moving back to New York, we needed a definitive diagnosis for the services. But it was really, we really knew, because when we got back the results, we didn't even cry, because we had a really, we basically knew.
Tell us what it's like living with two children who have muscular dystrophy.
So it depends really how you want to approach it. What me and my wife do is basically we do ad makim shadi magas. So we basically, from the moment they were diagnosed, we became like experts. And often in fact, I like when send new parents to me sometimes to educate them. Sometimes I tell them, don't send them to me yet, they're not ready for all the information. So we really, we're very heavily involved in the care. So they have 45 minutes of stretching every day, because that's a side effect. They take all these medications, and each medication causes other side effects. So they have a severe osteoporosis. They have literally, I think I counted up about, it's 22 sessions of therapy weekly. In that addition to, I take them swimming as much as possible to get them in the pool. Also, we have the mainstream, which is itself a challenge, because there are some cognitive effects. It's like a little bit of, they don't fit anywhere. They need a massive amount of support to be able to manage in the mainstream. Like during the summer, I actually spend 2-3 hours teaching them every day to try to help them get through the first few months of the next year. So basically that's essentially what life is, therapy and medicines. And they have a lot of simcha. You know, we always try to keep things very happy, and they're very known for that. They're being extremely happy.
Are you able to work, given all this?
Okay. The answer is no. He works very, very part-time. He tries to learn a call. He says he usually doesn't even make it to call. One of the, even if you test for everything, what he just said, you couldn't even, they would not have been able to diagnose what both of his children had, because it was so rare and so impossible to even detect. So I think the challenge that we have is recognizing that even with so much technology and so much information and so much knowledge, you still at some point in time have to say, listen, I still have to have, you know, emunah in God, in Hashem Baruch Hu, simply because you just, it's impossible to check for everything. So if you flip the back of the page just for a minute, and we're not going to have to leave in 5 minutes, but I just wanted to highlight a few things, some of the issues, right? The first thing was J screen of Dori Shara. We spoke about that, right? Gene surgery, genetic manipulation, is it permissible? So yeah, there's no question that all post-skim say today, if you need the surgery, genetic manipulation, that is completely, totally fine today to do. Again, it's almost like standard medical practice, right? It's like you are the doctor in surgery.
What was the biggest problem why wasn't allowed?
So the question is, how much is too much, right? How much medicine is too much medicine, right? Do I have to, when I manipulate, again, so when it first came out, we think, oh my goodness.
Too much yourself.
Too much yourself. You're literally, there were those when it first happened who said, you are literally playing with Ma'isa Hashem. How can you do that? You're a human being. But now, 20 years later, it's like standard practice in the medical world. Okay, it's like standard practice. Everyone does it today, right? And we see that often in the medical world, that when they first come out, sometimes the rabbinic world is very reluctant. That's too cutting edge. I'm going to use a very silly example, right? And you're all laugh. I remember when three-button suits first came out. Three buttons. People said, oh my goodness, chukas ha-goyim, how can you wear it? It's too stylish. It's not now. I think, they'll do six buttons, I think, even now, right? But what is it? Sometimes when it first comes out, it's like, oh, that's too much, right? You're playing too much God. Now, it's really standard practice. And there's no question, and that's what I wrote here, right? What should and what should it not be used for? So if the kid has blue eyes, they're 6'2", if he's going to be, you know, that's already, I think we're pushing our limit. That's where too much is too much, right? That's where you have to say designer babies, right? You have to say it's too much, right? So it'll be interesting. What about in 20 years from now?
That's another
topic. I think...
Why in 20 years? Every time. In 20 years, it's fine.
I don't think so. I actually think in 20 years, the medical ethicist will still say you shouldn't do it. I really do believe that. Because that already doesn't have... There's no I guess it's pragmatic. Not with blue eyes. Right?
Right.
No, 6'2", male versus female. Right? The notion of choosing those types of children... So yes, we want healthy children. And I think we want healthy children, but healthy is also a relative term, right? So I think as long as it's a healthy child, one in a thousand, that's sufficient, you know? You know, when should we test, and can you... Oh, there's no question you can overtest, because you can test for 20 million different things. There has to be a cutoff point at some time. And Rav Hirsch Schachter always says this, when you test for things that, if you had them, if it manifested itself, it'd make life extremely difficult. Right? So if you're able to avoid it, avoid it. Now, if you have it, deal with it, of course. Right? No one's saying to... you know, to have an abortion. That's why there's an amino acid test that's done. I don't remember how many weeks it is anymore. It's a baby osteosax. It's a major issue. So that is very complicated. If it comes out that the baby osteosax having an abortion, very few rabbanim will allow you to have an abortion, even if you find out the baby osteosax, right? Even though the baby's not going to live till 5 or 6, right? But that's a major, right? That is a major issue. You know, confidential or total secrecy. Again, you know, you have these potential challenges here. If it's secrecy, you know, there's stereotypes, but we don't want people to walk around thinking certain things. So maybe education, educating people might be the best way to solve that. Okay, then there's, you know, and the other one was, you know, should you reveal if you have certain things? At some point in time, you might have to. But of course, people have to be educated. And forced testing, believe it or not, many people are tremendous advocates for forcing people to be tested. Because when I meet with a guy before he gets married, I have 6 questions that I always ask. Question number 4 or 5, I don't remember anymore, is, have you and your bride been genetically tested? I don't care how you've been genetically tested, right? That's already too late, right? For Tarshan, right? If you have been genetically tested together, you must be genetically tested, right? Because if you know things now, it can make your life much easier than later on. My personal opinion is that it should be obligatory for everybody to be tested. Yeah.
Do you think it's right to break off a marriage if you all of a sudden like get genetically tested, like
yeah, you're engaged,
you get genetically tested, and you
so
get,
I think
like, you're all gonna have 2 sacks,
right? Like, so remember that can't be all gonna test. That's only 1 in 4,
right? But like just right? Hypothetically,
so I think it's like this: if there's a couple and their wedding is next week, and they find out that they're both curious for Tay-Sachs, right? So you can today, because of medical research and abilities, you could still have, and I told you what you could do in terms of eggs, and you could do fertility treatment, IVF, there's many things that you can do. Now, I don't believe those would be free. I think you have to pay for them. I'm not sure, though.
I think the first time you do IVF.
IVF, you get 1 round.
So here we go. Here's another issue. IVF, if for people who are conceiving having issues, 1 round is free. But if you're a carrier for Tay-Sachs, no government in the world wants to have someone in their country with Tay-Sachs because the cost on the medical system is going to be ginormous. So it'd be cheaper for them to pay for whatever it's going to cost you than to absorb the cost if they have Tay-Sachs. So it could be, and I don't know, it's an excellent question that in Canada they might even pay for it. I don't know. It's an excellent question. Would they pay if you were a carrier? I don't know. I don't know. Maybe not. Maybe not. But listen, there's many organizations that could help you. And, you know, there's PUA today, and many organizations. Again, there's tons out there. You don't even realize how many are out there, how much chesed that goes on. But that would be something which, again, but if you get tested, so again, you say, we'll get married. Okay, we'll deal with it, right? We'll deal with it. And yeah, it might cost us $100,000, $50,000. But again, it's just money. Right, and the $50,000 to make sure you're getting tax, anyone would spend it. You'd mortgage your house in order not to have that. Right.
So then, what's the main difference between that and getting tested before you start dating, and then decide like not to date that person?
Right. So I think and people can pipe in.
Timing is just the only.
Right. The difference is that you never want to be surprised. That is not good information to know before your wedding. It's just not. You don't want to do it that before your wedding. Right? It's not going to deal with it before your wedding, right? Or 2 weeks after you got engaged, right? So Dor Yeshiva says, we'll even say it's unacceptable. So you won't even start. You want to get involved in something. So you will never get to this emotional component to it where they've now been dating for 4 months and they said, oh my goodness, we're now, you know, both carriers.
But what if like, if it wasn't for that genetic screening, they would have met, they would have, like, fallen in love and whatever, like, and then you're preventing that. Like,
so just, that was the question before, is this going to prevent shidduchim? Right, you know, there's already, you know, people are worried, oh, there's not enough guys or good guys, I say, I don't know, whatever, right? I understand that. So the question is if that's true. By the way, you know, there's only reason why, this is actually very funny. You know, in the Hasidic world, there's not enough men. It is only in the Litvish world is there a quote-unquote share crisis. You know why? Because guys get married and girls get married at different ages. In the Hasidic world, guys get married when they're 18 or 19, so there's no issue. But I'm 23, so I get to marry anyone who's 23, 22, 21, 20, 19, 18, maybe not 17. Right? So I have 5 years of population to deal with. In the Hasidic world, a guy who's 19 marries a girl who's 19. That's it. So it's only in our society, we created this society which says the guy must be older. And mature. Fine. But that's what, but now the guy gets to choose of 5 years of populations of women. Way to go, guy. Right?
She kind of did
three. Kind of right? But that's why people don't realize that. We've created this social, right? The other two reasons that I say are, if you go to Beis Din, anywhere in the world, for every one male that converts to Judaism, there's four females that convert to Judaism. And every Beis Din is 4 to 1 of women who convert to Judaism. For sure. Now, I understand this. For a guy to convert, there's a pain or there's a painful aspect of it, which is a barrier, which I understand, right? But, okay. And I think this is true, that a boy is more likely to stop being religious than a girl. I think statistically, I think that is true. So, it's like, and also Bali Tshuva, there's a third population, female, there are more female Bali Tshuva than male. I think those are. You see it. That's what I've experienced over time. That's the last two comments. I don't have a statistic behind it. That's just what I see. That's just an observation. The first one is a hardcore based in statistic that they always talk about. So, okay. In conclusion, I think that this is a very important topic. It's a broader topic that has to do with how much human beings input and how much God. I think that we're lucky to be born in a society where the medical advancement is great, and I think we should use that to our advantage. You can't abuse it, but I think if you can use it in order to again, up to a statistical point, try to ensure that children and families are there's so many challenges in life, to have challenges like this, if you can avoid them, is clearly better. And therefore, I think that should be encouraged. That being said, you know, there has to be a limit to how much knowledge is too much knowledge. There's a bit of a hashkafic difference there that I've seen. I'll use a lack of a better term just because it's much easier. In the YU world, they are much more likely to say, do a little bit more. You know, go to that 200 realm. In the, there was like, I heard someone speaking, was based in Chicago. He's like, I even think Doris Sherman went too far. They should have stopped at 30 or 25, you know? So everyone agrees you have to do something. It's a machlokas and a shkafa, I believe, how far you go. And I think it's a valid hashkafic difference.
Like when?
So again, so some say, do it, and to me, do when you're born. why not? Others, Moshe Feinstein says, no, don't freak out. Do it only before they get married and they're going to. And again, Doris Sharm is all about shidduchim and dating, and whereas all these other systems, like in the medical world, they're not interested in shidduchim, they're interested in cheaper healthcare policy in Canada, right? They don't want people to have these issues because it's, so do a test, it costs $20, $50, whatever it costs the medical system, where God forbid if someone has a disease, the costs are going to be in the hundreds, millions, who knows how much money it's going to cost. So that's why, let's be honest, they're doing it for it's a numbers game. But again, at the end of the day, it's still trying to benefit the society, like you can't deny. It might be economically motivated, or might be economically motivated, but I don't believe that's the only reason. That's a little too cynical, just to say it that way. But again, I think the ultimate message is there's still a lot to daven for. There's a lot to what to pray for. At the same time, to using our abilities to help advance our world, I think is also an important value. And again, the whole thing, okay, how much? Everyone agrees you got to do it. Everyone agrees there's too much is too much. Where that spectrum is, at what age, secrecy, not secrecy, you know, those are kind of where the differences are out there. But I think fundamentally, we have to be able to thank God, and that we're in a generation
they're able to truly, hopefully, prevent certain things from happening, I think is a bracha.
Okay. Thank you, everybody.